Hi, friends. This is Andy, the temporary editor of the Gnomecast, and I am here with an important announcement. Misdirected Mark Productions is becoming the Polygamerous Podcast Network. Same shows, new network name. On April 15th, we will be changing over our podcast feeds from their current addresses at misdirectedmark.com to the new addresses at polygamero.us. If you're using a podcatcher, this shouldn't affect you. But hey, if it does, please let us know. And if you are using a direct feed to get your podcasts as of April 15th, 2024, you will need to update your feed to our new URLs, or else you'll stop receiving new podcasts, and we all know you don't want that to happen. You can find out more information and get the URLs at polygamero.us. That's polygamero.us.
Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Advice Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the bodacious Bob Queck, the jaunty Jim Anderson, and the cool Craig. Today, we've got myself, Ange, along with Chris and Josh, and we're going to talk about mixing up genres in our games. Before we do that, though, we're going to dive into our Get to Know a Gnome topic, and that question is, what's one of the weirdest or wildest games you've ever played or run that messed with genre expectations? Chris, I'm going to start with you.
Man, I saw this question and I was like, I don't actually know. Like, I maybe I misunderstood the question too. Like, what do you mean by messed with genre expectations?
That it was a combination of genres you did not expect or was not what the players expected, or just something that was a weird mix of things.
I mean, I know the weirdest games that I've seen that were like, oh, that's cool, but it didn't mess with my genre expectations when I started playing, because it was like what it was in the can, like Honey Heist, right? Like, you get to play Yogi Bear stealing picnic baskets. Or like Kia, where you're playing these birds that are just destroying a park in Australia. Like, I get that, right? Like, I don't think of one where I got, like, bamboozled by the genre expectations, though. I can't think of any. But if you're talking about games that are like, oh, that's kind of a weird concept, those ones,
yeah,
are pretty
good. I was specifically talking about a specific game you played or ran that just kind of flipped things on their head as far as genre expectations went.
Oh, I've got one. So I ran a Big Eyes Small Mouth game one time, whereas, you know, Big Eyes Small Mouth is like, you know, pick a genre, pick an anime genre. There's plenty of them. And I was like, no, all of them. You can play whatever from whatever, you know, kind of anime you like. So we had a typical shonen hero. We had a Pokeball or a Pokeball. We had a Pokemon trainer. We had like a super serious, like demon exorcist person. We had an outer space cat ninja mech pilot person. The way the characters interacted when they all got thrown together completely changed like their typical genre stories. Like, my favorite example is that the Pokemon trainer, when she found out that the exorcist was like getting possessed by a demon, she was like, well, a demon's a monster and Pokemon are monsters. Can I put the exorcist in a Pokeball? So there was a complete arc where the exorcist was kind of just like chilling out in the Pokeball and like dealing with his inner demons while also, you know, like talking to a Pikachu or something like that.
That's pretty good.
That is fun. Mine was, I don't remember what system it was. I want to say it might have been something super military-esque like Twilight 2000. But the concept of this game was a little Wreck-It Ralph, where all of the characters from these non-violent, slightly goofy video games ended up in a Call of Duty.
Oh no.
And had to fend for themselves. We had Mario.
Sure.
We had Lego Batman. We had Cooking Mama.
Cookie Mama would scare me if I came across her in a battlefield.
I know, right?
Some sort of, I don't know the game, but it was a tentacle monster thing that's just cartoony and goofy. And I played a sim.
Mm.
Nice.
And the whole reason I played The Sims is because I was very into The Sims 2 when it was out. And I spent the entire game talking in Simlish.
Oh, no. that's awesome. I was going to ask if you like emoted over your head and just went.
Yeah, it was just I had the cheat sheet that had a whole bunch of Simlish words, and the kid playing Lego Batman was just like, I don't understand this chick. it was just so much fun. Diving into our main topic, though, let's talk about mixing up genres. We tend to think of most of our RPGs in a very defined genre. Fantasy, science fiction, cyberpunk, comic book superheroes, and so on. But when you start digging down into the actual play of these games, there's a bit more blending happening when you actually have it at the table. And so we thought it would be good to take some time and talk about the good aspects of this and some of the things to be careful with. So first question to start off with is, what is genre?
I'm just like stealing the idea from like Phil and them. I mean, we've probably talked about genre a dozen or so times on Misdirected Mark. So genre is a particular type of literature, painting, film, music, or other art form, which people consider as a class because of special characteristics. And that's the important thing right there, the idea of special characteristics.
A lot of times there's like, well, I don't know if I can describe it, but I know it when I see it.
Mm-hmm. But we can describe it. There's ways to do it.
There is. But there's times where it gets, especially for your average person, it gets a little complicated and confusing trying to figure out what genre to put certain things in.
That's why we're having this episode, so we can help people figure out how to do that more efficiently.
And as any librarian would know, that it's almost, once you start digging down deep and getting like really specific about the stuff, it gets super hard to say this is this or this is that.
That is very true.
Usually better to keep it big or macro look at it.
Yeah, I fall back on this example a lot because it's one of my favorite things, but the MCU. Mm. The MCU is nominally comic book superheroes. But when you dig down into a lot of the individual movies, there are other genres mixed in, like Captain America Winter Soldier is a spy thriller.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy mm-hmm. is science fiction nonsense. You know, it's like there's a lot of different little bits and pieces that go into these things. So there's like an overarching genre of superheroes, but there's more to it than that. So what does this mean for RPGs?
If we're going to use that previous definition, that means they're a type of game which people consider a class because of special characteristics, those characteristics being style, form, content, or what we more commonly refer to as tropes.
Yeah, the connective tissues that hold everything together. So you kind of, you know, a general idea of what you're getting into when you pick up that game.
So what do you consider the connective tissues and tropes of our typical fantasy game?
Magic is definitely one of
them. Oh yeah, I was gonna say if it's a low magic setting, you kind of have to like say that on the back because it's assumed that there's gonna be a spell list somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. When it comes to fantasy, though, that's mostly what it is. There's some sort of magical or things that don't make real sense to them, right? But that's why fantasy is such a huge genre, and we have to like really dig. You start digging down into what is more than that. Mm-hmm. Then you start mixing things into it. It's the same thing with superheroes, right? What is superheroes? It's people that usually in colorful costumes with powers.
Oh yeah.
After that though, what does that even mean, right? It's like saying anime. Anime isn't actually to me a genre. It's just a kind of art form.
Yeah.
Because you know it's
a kind of style.
Even more than that, because now you have Chinese and Korean and American styled anime, I guess, is in quotation marks if you can't see that because it's a podcast, but that's what I think. I really love anime. I think you do too, Josh.
Oh, yeah. No, I do. Yeah, the fact that I ran Big Eyes Small Mouth is a pretty good example of the fact that I enjoy anime quite a bit.
Yeah. I was like picking out the shows as you were talking about the characters. I'm like, oh, I know that. Then you were like a cat ninja with a mech. I'm like, oh, that's different. I don't know if I've ever watched a cat ninja in a mech. I mean, I've watched cat ninjas and I've watched mech shows, but I've never watched cat ninja in a mech.
He was actually mashing up his character concepts between the animated Star Trek series and Bubblegum Crisis?
I know those things. I recognize that reference.
Speaking of the MCU.
Thanks, Cap. We appreciate you.
So let's talk about some RPGs that actually, out of the box, blend genre.
Off the top of my head, Starfinder is straight up science fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got similar classes to what you would expect in like a D&D style game, but they're all in starships and planets, and there's hacking and there's robots and everything like that. And then to a lesser extent, like even Pathfinder itself has some science fiction elements worked in, and also some horror elements, like Pathfinder 1 and to a lesser extent Pathfinder 2. Like, it's got all of the Lovecraftian horrors in the bestiaries. They've got androids and laser guns. They've got a whole campaign that's uncovering a starship.
One of my old school favorites as far as genre mashups is Shadowrun.
Oh, yeah, right?
Take your cyberpunk and mash it up with fantasy.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, Galorian is kitchen sink fantasy, right? Like, there's everything and anything that you can think of in the fantasy genres there, and their adventure paths have proven that out over the course of years and years now. But I'm totally with you on that. D&D even is like, it's just, when you have those super generic fantasy games, you basically have like what I consider kitchen sink fantasy. Like, you can put anything in.
Yeah.
And they have, if the game is modular enough, then you can attach other mechanics to make it work. But we'll talk about that later. What about you, Ange?
I don't want to steal from your list.
You can steal from my list. I wrote a bunch of stuff. I've done this topic so many times in my life over the 12 years. Like, I mean, I was just like looking at old show notes for stuff.
Well, I'll bring up one that I've run then, Knights Black Agents, because it is spy thriller mashed up with vampire horror.
And a hidden world, which is a genre unto itself. Deadlands is one, Western fantasy horror, real easy. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that one. Call of Cthulhu is another one with its mystery horror mashup. In fact, most of the Carve from Brindlewood games are some genre mashup of investigation and horror too. Public Access does it as analog horror with investigation, like mystery essentially. Mystery is the true genre that I'm talking about there. The Between, you got your period horror in London mashed up with investigation and monster hunting, which is in and of itself a kind of genre, a kind of a fantasy styled genre. And Brindlewood Bay, where you are these old ladies playing these kind of parlor-esque mysteries that are also horrific.
And it's even got like a subgenre of mystery in there. It's Brindlewood Bay is like cozy mystery.
Yeah, it's cozy mystery. That's exactly.
One of the newer ones that's come out in the last few years, The Wild Sea. It has mashed up so many genres and done it so seamlessly that it's kind of hard to pick out the ones that are in there. But there's like definitely some like far future fantasy, but also kind of like space-faring, like Firefly-esque, like build a crew sort of deal, but you're not in space. You're just on top of these humongous trees. Like, it's one of those ones where it's hard to like pinpoint the exact genres that it's mashing up, but it's definitely put a whole bunch of things in the blender.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that exploration fiction, right? Like, we're journeying to the new horizons, very Star Trek-esque in a way.
What are some of your favorite genre mix-ups that you guys have played or run?
So I love magic. So all of my things have magic in them. So like, I love low fantasy urban mystery. So that is anything like in a fantasy city, like a Fawford and the Grey Mouser and stuff, but with a little bit more mystery sticking around it. Heist also works in there for me. I also like high school swashbuckling urban fantasy. That is a lot of anime genre. Plus, we're playing a game on Misdirected Mark called, you know, Children of the Shroud, which is that. But man, I've watched so many high school animes that are basically that I love it. And I like playing survival fantasy dungeon crawls. I think those are a good time, too.
What about you, Josh?
Put anything and mix it with, and there's magic, and I'm probably going to at least give it a second look.
Kindred Souls right here.
The way I particularly like to mix genres is not so much taking the big ones, but taking something like, say, fantasy, and picking something that doesn't necessarily seem to go with it, right? I came up with that idea before I came on the podcast, but I didn't come up with an example, which would have been real good to do. But for example, like fantasy mixed with like George Romero-esque zombie horror, right? Or if you take like a Big Eyes Small Mouth game and you add in some like cosmic horror, right? So that there's some, you know, mind-bending happening. One time I ran a quick like 3-session one shot in scare quotes that you can't see because it's a podcast. It was a World of Darkness game that I mixed in Final Fantasy elements. So like there were Moogles that were essentially like save points for the characters, but they were like these hideous, like undersea creatures with like the, I forget the name of the fish that has the
anglerfish.
Yes. So they looked exactly like humanoid anglerfish, mm-hmm. but they were in every functional way, they were Moogles. So that's how I like to mash up
When you mentioned the anime with cosmic horror, I'm like, oh, I know that show. It's Soul Eater. Soul Eater had that. That was like one of the big things. Like there was a cosmic horror entity that was like maneuvering in the background from these people that like went around and like hunted down souls. It's very shonen anime.
One of my regular players jokes that every game is a Cthulhu game because every game will have some level of that cosmic horror in it somewhere. One of the things I love is regardless of the base genre, so to speak, whether it's fantasy, science fiction, superheroes, whatever, kids on bikes, mystery. Mm-hmm. It's all about the investigation and the mystery solving for me. And like, it almost doesn't matter what the original genre was. It's like, it's still going to be about the investigation and finding the clues and figuring out what's actually going on.
And like mystery is such a great genre to mix into to anything, really. Mm-hmm. If I were better at cooking, I would know an ingredient analogy to mix in with it. Like you can mix a mystery into any other genre because there's always got to be those obstacles in your player's way. You've always mm-hmm. got to like want them to figure out something and have a reveal, even if it's just a dungeon crawl, right? There's mystery in like finding the key to the locked door or the solution to the trap room or something like that.
Chris already mentioned heists.
Oh yeah.
You can put a heist in almost any genre. Any genre.
I will tell you, I just watched the entirety of The Artful Dodger because I have suffered from gout. I had a pretty bad gout flare-up, so I was sitting on the couch for a good chunk of the weekend, and that's on Disney Plus with Freddie Highmore, Highmore from Bad Willy Wonka movie. The guy who played Lupin in the Harry Potter movies, he's the guy from the guy who ran the crew that The Artful Dodger was a part of.
I can't think of his name.
I can't.
Oh, goodness.
It's slipping my mind. Anyways, it's like fast forwarded like 15 years and they're in Australia. And it's a weird period piece in Australia when surgery was not very good. He's a surgeon, so it's a medical procedural and a heist show at the same time.
Okay, talking about bizarre mashups, I would be 100% there for that. Oh my God. Okay.
Right? It's a really good show, actually. I was surprised at how it was on Disney Plus, which made me even more surprised because they like, you know, this is in the time where they didn't have anesthesia. So like the trick was to cut people's legs off as fast as possible to keep the pain down before they died from it. And they show some of that, like sawing off legs and stuff. I'm like, my Lord, on Disney Plus. If you want a weird genre mashup, there you go. There's one.
So let's talk about some best practices when blending genres together.
Do you want to do the example as I go through this list? Like we can make one up as we go. I think that'd be fun.
That sounds fun.
Lead us forward, Chris.
All right, so the first thing that I would do is I would pick two or three genres. So let's pick two or three genres. And each one of us can pick a genre.
Romance.
Superheroes.
Okay, superhero romance, and I will say pulp adventure to go with that. Superhero romance, pulp adventure. So now we need to understand what the special characteristics are of the tropes of these three things. So what are pick a couple of tropes from superhero.
Special superhuman powers. And colorful costumes.
Okay. And pick a couple tropes from romance.
Rivals to lovers. And a will they, won't they, will they, won't they aspect. And of course, you got to have the meet cute. There's got to be a meet cute somewhere in there.
Got to be a meet cute. And for a pulp adventure, I will say that these superhero folks are actually like adventuring off planet. Oh. So we'll do a little planetary stuff, looking for relics to help advance their own superhero civilization. So we're like journeying to look into dangerous places for relics of super powered varieties. That is the one thing I will put in there. So we're planet traveling, we're looking for relics, it's treasure hunting. So now, once we have those few things that we've selected, we need to figure out how they overlap and fit together in setting, mechanics, characters, and our adventures and scenarios. So we kind of have a setting already. We have planetary stuff, so we have to have multiple planets.
The technology level needs to be higher than what we have in our everyday life.
Mm-hmm. True, true.
So whether that's the world is as we know it and certain superheroes can travel between the stars, okay, that's one thing. Or just it's a more advanced civilization in the future.
Sure. Well, pick one of them.
Let's go Legion of Superheroes route, and it's the future.
All right, it's the future. That's a pretty solid setting right there. I think characters are very important, and when I mean characters, I mean our player characters, and then some pretty important NPCs. If I was going to set up the setting too, I would say, like, we are all part of an organization, right? That a pulp organization that goes from planet to planet looking for these relics for whatever reason. We haven't really decided that yet, probably for whatever the organization's goals are. With that, we would build characters inside of that. And then I would say that we would build a rival organization so that we can have those will they, won't they, meet cute things that happen too. That seem good, Josh?
Especially if they crash land on a planet and there's one tent, you know?
See, that's a cool idea for a scenario, mm-hmm. right? Like, we start with them crash landing on a planet and both groups and, like, what do you do now, right? We're stuck here for a period of time and bad things are happening on this planet. You could even invoke, since we're now shifting into a little bit of sci-fi stuff, I mean, planetary stuff, sci-fi stuff, we could, you know, just borrow the plot from, like, was it Perfect Dark, that Vin Diesel movie with all the aliens on the planet trying to kill you as you're trying to survive it?
Pitch Black.
Pitch Black. Yep.
Pitch Black.
Perfect Dark is a
There you go.
Video
That's
game.
A video yeah. game. My bad. So, like, that is us taking these pieces and putting them together. And then we need to find a game system that kind of will let all those things happen.
I was going to say, I think the game system is important to figure out.
Oh, it's super important.
Because game systems don't always do
pun intended.
All genres completely well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that is the mechanics thing to me is, like, all that stuff that we did is kind of the stuff that writers do when they're getting ready to write a book of some sort. Mm-hmm. I mean, Josh, I know you're a writer. I'm a writer too. Like, have my degree in writing, whatever, doesn't matter. You know, I've just been studying this stuff for years. So, like, the mechanics thing is where we get from creating a literary piece to playing a game. Right? Like, how do we play this game? You have to decide what is the game system and how much do you want to modify it to fit the mash that you're putting together.
And how are those tropes reflected in the mechanics, right? Like, if it's like a you know, D&D clone where we've got our, you know, main stats and our fighting stats and our skills, but nothing that emphasizes the interpersonal relationships, then it's going to make for a pretty poor romance genre emulator.
Yeah. I would actually have to add something to that, right? If we were going to use the fifth edition rule set as a base for it, not that I'm saying that we should, but, you know, that's one thing to do. I would put a mechanic in there as, like, when you write, like, four relationships that are important to you, and they can change over the course of time, but when they come up and you play into them, then they hinder you, you get, like, a point of inspiration. Or if you use the luck mechanic from Tales of the Valiant, you get a point of luck that you can spend later. Or then you can spend one of those points of luck maybe to give somebody else advantage or to give them a +1 or whatever if they're one of your relationships, or maybe it's worth more if it's they're one of your relationships. Furthermore, you can call for an interlude scene between action scenes to have these dramatic moments with your relationships to then generate those points, or to even potentially give you back hit points or resources to help you push forward into the future.
Borrowing a little from Tales of the Loop there.
Yep, absolutely. Because why not?
Exactly.
Right?
That brings up a really good point about when you're thinking of mashing up your genres, you have to kind of think about what's your main genre and then what are your subgenres, right? Because then you're going to know how important you're going to weight those rules, right? If we're spending a lot of time and energy focusing on, like, the relationship mechanics and not paying so much attention to, like, the power mechanics of our superheroes, then it's probably going to be a romance first game, right? But if we have, like, a huge list of superpowers that we can create and level up and yada yada, and then maybe one or two subsystems for the romance, then, you know, it's going to change the feel of the game.
So I think the most interesting thing to do when I try to figure this stuff out for these main genres, when I decide what my main genres are, is how the mechanics from those two different sides can interact with each other.
Ooh.
And create strong interactions between them so that they both matter a lot.
I think a lot of people will tend to, like, Chris, you mentioned doing this in 5e, which is not necessarily the best choice of system.
It's not what I would do.
No, but a lot of people are comfortable with it, so it's going to be their first choice when they start trying to do these type of mashups. And I'd say, you know, you do you. It's fine to try what you want with what you're comfortable with, but it's worth looking at other games to see how they handle these different genres and things you might want to use or pull together for whatever game you're trying to do, because D&D at its core is a, you know, monster punching game.
Yes.
People have been able to do many wonderful, you know, stories and games with it, but that's usually because of the players at the table, not because of the mechanics of the game.
I think that the 5th edition core mechanic is so popular with all these different games is partially because of D&D, partially because of Critical Role, whatever. You can fight about it if you want. But it's the roll at a number with those 6 base stats and your proficiency bonus is mm-hmm. so flexible, is why we've seen it in so many games. It's so simple, and it's so easy to adapt to different things. And you can just lay stuff on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why it's such a widely used game. Like, we didn't see 4th edition get used this widely. We saw 3rd edition get used pretty widely, but I don't think nearly as widely as 5th edition.
People forget.
Yeah, that was for other reasons.
Everything in 2003, everything was D20. Yeah. It was so hard to find a new game that was not D20 in that time period. Maybe Savage Worlds?
Yeah, but in a world where we have Powered by the Apocalypse and Forge in the Dark and a bunch of these other games, like, there's so many D20 variants coming out because of how easy it is to just adapt.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was doing the game that we're talking about, I would probably use Masks as a base more before I used anything else. I think it actually does a better job of getting closer to what we're looking for, and then we just have to age up the characters and figure out how relationships and, like, status effects work and whatnot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Masks would be perfect for something
like this. Depending on how much time you like to devote to tinkering with systems, right? Like, there's a whole spectrum. Like, we could just take Masks and do a little bit of tinkering. We could take something like Cortex Prime or the Cypher system or Genesis or one of those other generic systems that are like toolbox systems that help you build it out on your own if you want it a little bit more bespoke. Or if you're like, no, I know how I'm going to do this in 5th edition. I've got an idea, and you want to turn it into your heartbreaker. Then, like, if that's fun for you, go for it.
Everyone has their own heartbreaker.
Everybody.
So let's talk about when mixing genres go bad. Have you ever seen a game or just, you know, a one-shot or something where it went bad, it went poorly?
I've seen it go poorly the most times when there's like the one person who isn't aligned with everybody else. And it's usually some like communication issues or maybe some like less savviness in the particular genres that you're mashing up. But then you've got like your Tolkien-esque band of hobbits and horse wranglers, or I forget, the Rohan, that's the name of them.
Horse wranglers.
And then there's like Chris Redfield standing in the corner. Right, like that's I think when there's the most like record scratch moment happening is when everybody isn't on the same page. So you kind of have to like make sure that everybody is as savvy with the particular genres that you're looking to tweak.
I played Masks at Gen Con one year where we had everyone else was playing, you know, Teen Titans or Young Justice or that, like, and we had one guy who was in the Snyder Murderverse.
Mm.
Like, he kept trying to destroy buildings and cause property damage and get a body count, and we were just like, dude, you are not playing the same game that the rest of us are. That's not necessarily a genre mashup problem, but it's definitely an issue you can face when all of your players don't understand the genre you're supposed to be working in. What about you, Chris?
I mean, I pretty much would just echo what you two are saying. There's never been a bad genre mash. Like, there are bad executions on the genre mash, but there's not a bad genre mash.
Yeah.
Like, you could do anything. We've seen it. I mean, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies exists out there, folks. I mean, you might not like it, but it's not a terrible execution on the premise, right? That's what we're talking about when we're mashing the stuff up. So, like, if you don't if you don't build characters that fit into the mashup, if you didn't construct scenarios that fit into the mashup, if you don't have mechanics that feel satisfying to the mashup, and even then you can play around that stuff. That's the thing about this hobby. We can play around most of these things as long as we have a common vision.
I think this leads into the next question, and that's, what are the things we need to be careful of when we are blending genres together? And I think the thing I would point out from those times where we have people who are not on the same page, or a GM who's put things together that isn't quite gelling, it's sometimes an issue of tone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You haven't established what the tone of the game needs to be. And I will fully confess that I have made this mistake myself in some of my old superhero campaigns, where I wasn't as firm about what I wanted from the game. And, you know, it was, you know, were we, was this a low superpower gritty setting where, you know, we're just one step away from normal people? Or is this four color superhero Justice League BS? You know, and if you don't figure out what your tone needs to be, that can send your game reeling off the cliff face.
There's the meme about, like, everybody session one Fellowship of the Rings, everybody session four Monty Python, right? So there's that, but that, I feel like that's sort of like a natural drift that happens as you're playing games. The first thing that comes to my mind is like horror genre. When you're mixing in horror genre, it can get especially tricky to make sure you get that tone right, because you could have something that's like Army of Darkness, goofy horror comedy, or you could have something that's like Evil Dead reboot from a few years ago that's like super gritty and violent, right? And so you just say like, oh, it's going to be like Evil Dead-esque, you know, right?
Which one?
Yeah, it's just like emphasizing what you said about tone. I think that's dead on.
Let's talk about how to solve the problem. There's a couple of, off the top of my head, session zero cats, mm-hmm. concept, aim, tone, subject matter. The tone part will solve a good chunk of those problems. And then I always use stars and wishes at the ends of my games now, because then as a game master, if I thought the tone was getting off, my wish can be, can we rein the tone in for next time? Or other players can be like, I wish to rein the tone in back to what it used to be next time. Or we wish for the tone to change. Then we can converse about getting back to what we want at the table. That's me off the top of my head.
I think there's this thing that lingers from the days of yore for GMs, where we don't want to tell our players no. We don't want to tell our players they're not playing the game we're trying to run. And, you know, it's people hesitate to like tell the players, hey, you're kind of going off into left field here, or hey, that isn't really what the tone of this game is about. And I think it's an important skill for GMs to develop the ability to say, hey, that's not the game we're playing here. And like, try and get everyone on the same page again.
Oh man, this is a whole other conversation. This is a whole other topic. It is a whole other topic. It's table culture. It's, what is the culture of your table, and how do you all work together as a game group to get onto the page that you want to be on?
I made a player cry once at a con because he was not playing the game everyone else was, and when I tried to, tried to rein him in through play, that wasn't working. And I finally was like, okay, let's take a break, and had a conversation with him out of character. And I broke this poor kid. I was trying to be kind. I was trying to be gentle, but he was not prepared to be told that what he was doing was not enjoyed by everyone at the table. Mm. And it can be really tough to figure out how to do that. But it's when the tone of your game is really going off the rails, it's important to kind of step in and try and figure it out.
Yeah, like as a game master or a player at the table, there are things that you can do to help with that too during play. As a player, you can turn to the player that's playing and in character play to the tone. And if they're playing out of tone, ask them in character, like, "What, are you okay, man? Is everything all right? Like, what's going on here?" Or react to it as the character would in the game to that strangeness, right? Because if it's tonally awkward, then it's strange in the world. It would make sense to me. You can, as a game master, just ask the player what they're trying to get out of it. Be like, hey, man, what are, or person or folk or whatever, What are you trying to get out of this? Like, I'm just curious. Just let me know so that we can all help you get to the fun that you want too, and that you can get to the fun that we want. And like I said, there's the stuff outside of play that you can do. Those are two off the top of my head that I've used many, many times in my play.
Definitely try and fix it at the table, in game, but if that's not working, it's definitely time for an out-of-character conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
So any last words on mixing up genres, throwing them in the blender and seeing what comes out?
I think I would just say that like every story is a mix of genres. If you know what you're trying to do, what you're trying to achieve, and you can find the tropes from those genres, those tropes, the really common ones, are really great signposts for your players that will help them lean into the story, and they'll find it satisfying when, you know, they're rewarded. Like, I think he's trying to do a friends to lovers thing here, and then it finds out that, you know, it turns out that it is, and they're like, yes, I feel so smart and accomplished.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I gave the whole playbook that I've been using and talking about for like 12 years. I said everything I need to say. That's how I feel about genres and genre mixing up and genre mashing. You can hear us playing it on Misdirected Mark Plays, The Children of the Shroud. It's a genre mash.
Yeah. And I would just reiterate session zero. Get everyone on the same page. That session zero is so important for having everyone understand what is trying to be attempted with that game.
Yeah, actually, can we talk about that for a second? Because there's sure. there's two ways to go about it. And Josh, I'd like to hear your take on this too, if you've done this or how you've done this. Like, you can go off by yourself as a game master that you're getting ready to run a game and like come up with all this stuff yourself, this genre mash, and then go find players that want to be inside of it. Or you can just go to your game group with some pretty rough ideas, like these are the kind of genres I'm thinking and what I'm thinking. What do you all think and how do you want to add to it? And let them help you build out the setting and figure out what kind of character concepts that would play well within that. And that might shift what your subgenres are and your genres are. That's how it worked for our Children of the Shroud game. Well, what has your experience been with that, Josh?
I've done both, and it really depends on the group I'm planning to run for. I tend to think about my group before I, like, concurrently with planning a new campaign. So I know I've got a group of friends that are, you know, really into this sort of, like, they're really into like fantasy and they want to play fantasy games and they don't really care too much about playing sci-fi games, right? So I know if like I'm really jonesing to, you know, run a sci-fi game, I'll look to a different set of friends or a different mix of friends. Thinking about our conversation, I would look at my main genre first and figure out which group I'm going to take that to. And then knowing those players' preferences, I know that some of those players are really, really big on like, let's make this setting our own. Whereas others are like, I'll play whatever, just tell me what it is. I don't want to have to think beforehand. I have enough on my plate coming up with one single character. I don't want to, you worry about the world. I don't want to worry about the world.
I find I have better luck with figuring out the general gist of what I want to run and coming up with the elevator pitch for my players and then finding out what interests them about that pitch. I haven't had very good luck with the stone soup version of creating a game genre where everyone contributes ideas, because invariably one of the players contributes something that I have absolutely no interest in engaging with, and I don't know how to tell them I don't like their idea, so I don't want to incorporate it into the game. And as a result, I've had better luck with the, here's my elevator pitch. What about this do you like? What areas of this do you want to lean into? I feel like I do a pretty good job of tailoring my game to my players, but I've never found enough longevity with the tell, like, everyone contribute to the setting type of idea.
There's some like setting creation systems that have like votes and like vetoes and chips you can put in so that like that sort of thing gets evened out a little bit. But yeah, I can see how like doing like everybody's idea gets equal share at the table, that can get overwhelming. I think that we could put back into like the things not to do when mashing up genres, because
Yeah, that's actually probably a good tip to not do that.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm more like you, Angela. Like I usually want to come with a concept and like 50% of it done, and then be like, all right, who wants to add into this idea and make sure it's inside of this idea? And I'm a big vetoer. I'm like, nah, I ain't gonna work. Sorry, you can't do that.
One of the other issues too is when you do something like that, where you come to the table and you say, okay, people, give me your ideas. People are gonna feel left out if they're not contributing an idea. So the idea they may be contributing may not be anything they're actually tied to or that interested in, but they feel like they need to contribute something anyway. I keep thinking of this Monster of the Week campaign I ran where my buddy Woody created this evil group of wizards that I had absolutely no desire to interact with at all. But like, he insisted that this was something, you know, his character was part of. And I'm like, well, what made you leave them? Who says I left them? And I'm like, that's not the game I want to run, man. Mm. But I didn't have the skills as a GM to like push back on that and say, no, this isn't really a thing I want to engage with. And as a result, it was an idea he contributed that just kind of languished off to the side and I ignored it.
I think the moral of the conversation that we've just had is that there's very much a way to do all of the things that we are talking about in different ways with the right setup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So instead of just saying it depends, like a very famous podcaster that used to do that I know, we just say, just find the right methodology for the thing that you want to do. You want to go stone soup? You do what Josh said. You find a game setting creation system that lets you veto things and mesh with things. Or heck, even go play a game like Microscope that lets you actually build out your timeline and in some ways your setting. You can actually just
Decima.
Take out the... Yeah, there you go. Decima. Also a game that can do that. I mean, I've heard of people that play The Quiet Year and then run a game off of The Quiet Year setting that they built for that year. There's all sorts of interesting little things that you can do if you want to.
Well, I think we have covered genre mashups and mix-ups, so let's get out of here. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link at the Gnome Stew website, the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, or probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows, here's one to check out.
Pandas Talking Games. Queer gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas, Phil, and Senda every Wednesday answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. Get cozy and let's talk about some games.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, GnomeStew on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to? Josh, go.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the Nebula Awards are coming up this summer, and they just announced all of the nominees. I want to give a shout out to having your TBR pile exploded with amazing stories, both novels, novellas, novelettes, short stories. The list is outstanding. You have to check it out.
Awesome. Can you get us a link for the Nebula Awards nominees for us to have in the
show? Oh yeah, I will link the YouTube announcement they did, because they got professional audiobook narrators to read excerpts from everything, and if that doesn't make you want to read everything on the list, nothing will.
Chris, what about you?
The Daggerheart playtest came out. I don't know if anybody's talked about it yet. I've been reading it. It's like 400 pages of stuff. They gave us a whole game. Like, here's your beta. It's a whole game. I'm like, that's a lot of information. And it's been pretty well received. There was this weird thing on the internet for a hot second where people were like, this game is just this, this, and this. I'm like, does anybody understand how game design works in general RPG land? I'm so confused right now.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I know people are like, well, this isn't D&D. Well,
of course it's not D&D. Those aren't even the people that made me like scratch my head at someone's are like, this is like Powered by the Apocalypse and some of this other game, like Little Forge in the Dark, and they're like, can't they make something original? I'm like, I don't think you understand how game design works. Have you not realized that every Forge in the Dark game is just a modification from Powered by the Apocalypse games? Like, I don't know. Like, we're not living in the Forge era anymore, folks. This is how game design works.
I'm going to give a shout out to a YouTube video that kind of inspired me a little bit for this episode, even though it didn't come up. Extra Credits is a channel that does a lot of videos looking at game design for video games and the like. And they recently had a video entitled How Fortnite Crossovers Corrupted the Industry. It talks a little bit about genre mashups that aren't done with integrity. You know, it's nothing against Fortnite, because Fortnite is what it is, but it's the other game game corporations trying to ride that Fortnite coattail by doing similar mashups in games that don't make sense, like being able to buy a Skeletor skin for Call of Duty. So I'll have a link to that in our show notes.
What's wrong with running around with Skeletor and shooting people?
Nothing says serious military drama to me like a giant purple skeleton with magic powers.
You're 100% correct. Nothing.
Do you think we have enough ingredients in the stew already, or do we need to mix it up a little bit more?
Well, if we throw each of us into the stew, then we can have a gnome mashup.